KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
KUOW 94.9 Seattle. I'm Ross Reynolds. By the year 2030, seniors are going to make up more than 20% of Washington State's population. Are we ready for what some call the silver tsunami? That's the subject of a forum getting underway right now in downtown Seattle, and we're joined by two of the speakers at that forum. Ai-Jen Poo directs the National Domestic Workers Alliance, which organizes nannies and housekeepers and caregivers for the elderly. She was named one of Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential People in the World. Also with us, Dean Baker, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C. His most recent book is The End of Loser Liberalism, Making Markets Progressive. Is this rapidly aging population a silver tsunami, Dean Baker?
Well, silver tsunami is a colorful term, but I think the main point here is we're talking about a very, very big change in the demographics. We're going to have a much larger elderly population than we're used to, and we do have to make preparations for it. And, you know, unfortunately, I think in many ways people are not prepared. People have not been able to save as much as they would have liked to have a secure retirement. And in this case, this particular issue, people dealing with the situation where they might need long-term care, we find that people are, for the most part, very unprepared. They don't realize that there's a substantial likelihood that they might be in a situation where they need care, that they're unlikely to have the resources to provide for it themselves. The government programs, Medicare does not pay for long-term care for the most part. Medicaid will, but only for lower-income people. So we have a lot of people that, middle-income people, they're simply unprepared for this sort of situation.
A tsunami is not something to be looked forward to. Ian Poo, when it comes to your perspective as the director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance, you work with a lot of people who are helping out seniors. Is this kind of an overwhelming way of approaching us?
Absolutely. They say that by the year 2050, 27 million Americans are going to need a caregiver just to meet their basic daily needs. And the entire direct care workforce, so that includes nursing home workers and home health care workers, the entire workforce is only 3 million strong. And because the working conditions are so poor, they're excluded from basic labor protections, the wages are so low they can't support their own families, the current workforce that we have isn't even sustainable. And so what we're looking at is a situation with an exponentially increased need, an already unstable and vulnerable workforce, and we've got to find a way to both to transform that, to create better jobs, better quality jobs, and more of them.
Why aren't they just created by the marketplace? I know when Microsoft needs extra workers, they recruit them, they pay them more money, they even work out visas so they can come in from foreign countries. Why isn't that working when it comes to caring for our seniors? There's more demand, but it seems like we don't have the people to do it.
We've historically not ever fully accounted for the work that goes into caring for families across generations, and that includes child care, and it applies to elder care as well, that we haven't adequately accounted for the amount of work, the amount of family caregiving on top of paid caregiving work that sustains people's needs. And I think that part of that has to do with the fact that this work has historically been associated with women and has been assumed that women either paid or unpaid, will continue to absorb the need. And that's just got to change. That's not sustainable.
So from your perspective, one of the facets of this silver tsunami is that we should be expected paying a lot more for the caregivers for these people as they become old and need that help.
Absolutely. We should be making sure that these jobs are quality, dignified jobs that people can take pride in, where there's training and workforce preparation and career ladders, pathways to citizenship for immigrants who are working in this field, as well as making sure that every family who has care needs gets the support that they need and can afford the care that they need. And I think that, you know, Dean and I have done a lot of work together on this, and we think that, you know, for a small fraction, tiny, tiny fraction of the defense budget, we could make sure that every single American family had the care, supports, and services that they needed to live with dignity. So I think we're just going to have to start shifting our priorities in that way as a nation.
So, Dean Baker, along with the additional expenses that Ai-Jen Poo has just outlined, you were mentioning a little bit earlier, we don't save enough. Americans don't save enough for their retirement. So we should expect there also is going to need to be more federal support for these seniors because they won't have enough money on their own to pay for these things.
Well, that's the basic story. I mean, we already have programs like Social Security and Medicare. And the whole point, we all understand that, you know, when we're in our 60s or 70s or 80s, we're not going to be working or certainly not working full time. We understand that. And that's the whole logic of, you know, these programs, that during our working lifetime, we're in effect putting aside money in Social Security, in Medicare, to support ourselves in retirement. And we're going to have to do that as well. Home health care has to be part of that mix. And, you know, exactly the points Ai-Jen was raising. We recognize that's a need. And, you know, part of the story is that it hasn't been taken seriously, again, in large part because you have a workforce overwhelmingly female, largely immigrant, and you know, these are workers that often have not been treated very well. And, you know, that's presumably not the path forward. We don't envision that, you know, 10, 20, 30 years in the future that we're going to be getting by with a labor force that's, you know, working here under, you know, very often, you know, not documented workers under threat of deportation. I mean, that's not a viable path going forward.
We're talking about the future, what's called the silver tsunami. Here in Washington State, by 2030, seniors will make up more than 20% of our population. What are the implications of that? What's going to happen? Medicare is the federal health program for seniors. It's kind of the main funnel for that money, helping those folks out. It cost $555 billion last year. And I understand the Congressional Budget Office has projected that number will nearly double by 2022. Dean Baker, is that an accurate figure, do you think? Will those numbers
double?
It's
a really good question. And, you know, this is one, I don't know if fascinating is the right word for it, but healthcare costs have actually slowed very sharply over the last 5 years. And this is a big debate, and I'm not the greatest expert on it. It's a big debate among health economists as to whether this marks a permanent slowing, because healthcare has been an enormous problem for the United States. Our costs are more than twice as much per person as for other wealthy nations, Canada, Germany, whoever you want to throw in the mix. And we don't get anything for it. I mean, you're very hard-pressed to identify better, you know, better health outcomes than these other countries. So when the Congressional Budget Office is making these projections, they're assuming that we're still on this rapid growth path, which we seem to have been diverted from. And if that proves to be true, if it turns out we're actually on a slower growth path, that's going to mean we're going to have a lot more room in our budget for a lot of things, including, for example, adding home health care as a benefit, perhaps in the Medicare program.
Well, here's something we hear a lot. Fears that the Medicare program costs are going to expand rapidly. The fact that we're living longer leads some to say, you know, we should just increase the age of eligibility of Medicare from 65 to 67. What do you think about that, Ai-Jen Poo?
All I know is that the system as a whole needs a really big value shift. We need to make sure that that these programs are much more affordable. I don't know if elevating the number is the right thing. There's a lot of debate about that issue. But I do know that by shifting our budget priorities and improving the state of the economy by investing in the low-wage workforce, you know, this care workforce is the second fastest growing workforce in the country. And as long as it stays in poverty wages, it won't reach its full potential in terms of being able to support economic growth for the economy as a whole. So I think that an investment in better wages and better working conditions for this low-wage workforce could make a huge difference in terms of the economy's well-being as a whole. And that's the kind of thing I'd like to see us working towards. And there's actually a very concrete thing that can be done very soon. There's a regulatory change that is on the table, that is waiting in the wings at the Department of Labor, that would bring 1.8 million elder care providers and home care workers under minimum wage and overtime protections that they're currently excluded from. And so what the implications of the exclusion are, that members of ours, like Thelma Reta, who's an elder care provider in Los Angeles, makes $35 per day to provide round-the-clock care for an elderly couple. And so if we actually make sure that this workforce is fully covered by minimum wage and overtime protections, we could see a huge improvement and also a huge investment in a critical low-wage workforce.
Labor unions have traditionally been the organizing force to ensure that people get a living wage and are protected by that. Do you think we'll need to see more organizing among these workers? And who do they negotiate with when it comes to getting better wages?
We'll definitely need, we always need more organizing and more education. I think that every single household and employer should be in conversation with the workers who are providing care in their home about what they can do to better support the workplace being not only a place where they're receiving quality care, but also the place where there's a quality job. I think that a lot of these bargaining agreements or workplace contracts are negotiated with state entities, with county and municipal entities that are set up. Sometimes they're called public authorities, sometimes they're called intermediaries. But they're negotiated with the government, and also in private pay arrangements, they're negotiated directly with employers.
Do workers who work with seniors, is there solidarity, or are they kind of underselling one another to get those jobs, thereby maybe causing declining wages for all of them?
Well, we are part of a campaign called Caring Across Generations, which is bringing together seniors around the country and people with disabilities around the country and their families with workers and their families, home care worker unions and our members, to actually present together a vision for the future of care in this country that really unites those interests and really looks at how can we both create quality care for everyone who needs it and quality jobs for the workforce. And there's been tremendous interest in this campaign and this effort, and we think that there's a movement growing that's about a more caring America that works for all of us, where it's not about consumers versus workers or employers versus workers, but both and for all of us.
You know, we're talking about health care, and of course, we are in the process of going towards the Affordable Health Care Act, passed by Congress, signed into law by the president, verified by the Supreme Court. Will the Affordable Care Act affect any of these issues we're talking about? Because as you mentioned, Dean Baker, it is health care that's really driving a lot of these costs.
Well, it certainly will. And what I have to say is it will do it in unpredictable ways. I mean, what we're doing is setting up the health care exchanges that roughly half the states, I don't know the exact number, but roughly half the states have opted not to do it themselves. So that means these exchanges will be run by the federal government. So in effect, it means we're setting up this large governmental system through which people will be buying private insurance. Other states, the other 25, Washington State being one of them, will set up their own exchanges, and you know, hopefully those will be well run. And what this means, people will have health insurance. But this sets up another network. So what that means is that we're in effect going to have three largely federal programs, Medicare, Medicaid, and then the health exchange programs running side by side. And in that sense, it might set up a better basis to actually integrate home health care into that network. But, you know, as I say, at this point, you know, we're sort of looking into this, you know, talking about tsunami. This is also a tsunami hitting us much, much quicker. You know, I think everyone hopes this works out well and we have well operating exchanges in a year. But, you know, that at this point is kind of anyone's guess.
And kind of a big overriding question in the other Washington is there's huge fears about the federal budget deficit from both the Democrats and the Republicans. The idea we have to cut back on spending, we have to increase taxes. And is some of that going to be aimed at Medicare, at Social Security?
Well, there are people who want to aim it that way. And I'll try and avoid going too much into my diatribe here. But the reason we have large budget deficits today is entirely because the economy collapsed. This is easy to show. You could show it any number of different ways. But to my mind, the simplest story is if you go back to 2007, the deficit was just 1.2% GDP. That's a modest deficit. We can run a deficit of 1.2% GDP literally forever. The reason the deficit grew, it wasn't because we had some big, you know, spending program or big permanent tax cuts. When the recession hit, tax collections plummeted. People are out of work. We increased payments on things like unemployment benefits. Then on top of that, we had deliberate stimulus to boost the economy. That was, of course, temporary. But, you know, we saw the downturn. We had spending programs. We had tax cuts, the Make Work Pay tax credit, the payroll tax cut. That was to boost the economy. But we haven't had permanent changes in spending and taxes that have caused a deficit. It was purely a response to the economy. So to my mind, it's kind of scary that we have things so backward. We have this huge economic downturn that gives us large budget deficits. Now everyone's focused on the deficits rather than the downturn. And what we really have to do is get the economy back on its feet. And if we had the economy, if we're back where we were in 2007 with 5% unemployment, we'd again have very modest deficits. Over a longer term, there is a story you could tell, and this gets back to the healthcare issue, that if we continue to have healthcare costs grow out of control, then come 10 years out or whatever, we will be looking at large budget deficits. But at least for the time being, this has really been something that's been hyped up that just doesn't exist. We don't have a deficit problem.
Well, one thing that's been pulled into these discussions is Social Security, and some people point to what they say is the deficit for Social Security for the first time in 2012, where it spent $49 million in benefits, more than it took in revenue. You say that's not the whole story. We shouldn't be looking at it that way.
Well, a couple things. First off, we've deliberately built up a trust fund because we're looking long-term with Social Security. And Social Security is a separate program. It's supposed to be off budget. That's the way it's always been treated in the past. So I do worry when it gets brought into deficit conversations this way. But in terms of its own finances, it actually has still has a surplus. When people talk about saying it spent more than it took in, they're ignoring that it took in about $120 billion in interest on the trust fund. So we actually added to the trust fund about $60 billion last year. It's still growing. So what happened is we're paying out more in benefits than we're taking in taxes. But if you add in the interest that we're getting on the government bonds held in the trust fund, there's still a surplus there. Now, again, over a longer term, we are projected to face a shortfall. The Congressional Budget Office puts the year as 2034 when we'll first face a shortfall. Somewhere we're clearly going to have to do something about Social Security. But that's something that I would say should be kept out of the current budget debates because we have to deal with that as, you know, looking at the system as a whole. You have enough on your table when you're talking about the budget. Let's leave Social Security out of that picture.
Hi, Jen Poo. I want to go back to the Affordable Care Act, which even President Obama is now embracing the name Obamacare for it. How do you think it influences the issues that you've been talking about? Does it change the situation at all for the workers you're organizing who work for people who are seniors?
It absolutely does. There will be very important fights throughout the course of this legislative session at the state level around accepting the Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act. And in states that do expand the Medicaid programs through the ACA, many, many more workers, home care workers, low-wage workers in the home health care and long-term care sector will have access to health insurance who previously could not have access to it. So I think it would be a huge step forward in terms of access to health care and health insurance for the workforce for states that do accept the Medicaid expansion. So it's very important.
You know, we're talking about the silver tsunami in the United States, but the populations of other developed nations are aging much more quickly than we are. It's a huge problem in Japan. It's a huge problem in some nations in Western Europe. Is there anything, do either of you see anything in the way that they are dealing with this that we could learn from?
Well, certainly have lower health care costs in all those countries, and that's really quite striking. Japan, which has the oldest population, has per-person health care costs that are less than half of ours. So, you know, I'm not going to claim any expertise on their health care system, but the reality is they're living longer, for the most part healthier, and spending an awful lot less money. So I would say, you know, it shows two things. One is it can be affordable. I mean, Japan's not going down the tubes as much as some people might claim that. There are a lot of people willing to buy Japanese debt at incredibly low interest rates, so the people actually putting money on the line don't believe that. And secondly, whatever we're looking at by way of an age tsunami, Japan's about 20 years ahead of us.
Ai-Jin Poo, how about when it comes to those people who are caring for our seniors? Do other countries do it in a way that we could learn from?
Absolutely. I think there are other countries that invest much more in training and preparation, workforce preparation. And in general, there's a different view of the workforce as a skilled workforce, a job to be proud of. And I think that, you know, in looking at what's happening here over the course of the next 10 years, we believe that we could create 2 million new jobs in home care to support the growing aging population and just barely meet the needs. And a lot of other countries particularly have seen that home-based care and aging in place is a much more efficient and effective way that people prefer to age. And so we want to promote those jobs being created in home care here, learning from some of those examples from abroad.
Ai-Jin Poo directs the National Domestic Workers Alliance. You also heard from economist Dean Baker. They're going to hot-foot it out of here and head down to a forum downtown called Preparing for the Silver Tsunami. It's now underway at the Arctic Club in downtown Seattle. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
From KUOW, I'm Ross Reynolds.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.